want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 195 of the Geocaching Podcast, Caching at Night, recorded live on March 16th, 2011. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show tonight, please call 724-444-7444, and our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate on the right. We have a voicemail line, 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is brought to you by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all of your caching needs. Welcome back, Daryl. I almost said Montu, but we don't have Montu tonight.
No, he wasn't able to join us tonight, so it's just the two of us and our guest, who we'll introduce in a little while.
So, how have you been since last week?
Pretty good. Well, it's actually been 2 weeks now since we had to cancel last week's show, but it hasn't been too bad, and today was what kind of weather where you just had to get outside?
Yeah, it was. It was totally, totally hot. Like, well, I don't want to say hot, but it was really warm here. And I mean, that's actually what I did. I didn't get any geocaching per se in, well, finding any geocaches, but I did go ahead and shoot coordinates for my next puzzle cache, which hopefully should be out soon. And the puzzle cache should be fun because I'm actually going to go ahead and give that GSAC webinar that I did a while back. I'm going to go ahead and give the first to find and first to solve a copy of that for free. So even if you're not in my local area and can't find the cache, and but you're the first to solve the puzzle, I'm going to go ahead and give you the copy of that too. So I'll definitely post that on Twitter once it's published and let you guys take a shot at that.
Yeah, cool. It's a lot better than what I did, since I did like no caching the last week and a half or whatever. I didn't even get to do the geocaching 12 of 12.
Oh man, that stinks. The 12 of 12 you didn't get to do?
No, I didn't even get to do a 12, really, or my regular 12 of 12. You know, no photography, no nothing, just, you know, running around doing errands in this really icky, nasty, yucky weather. But, yeah, you know, tonight was great. I actually got out for my first bike ride of the year and even got some walking in. So, you know, I'm really happy about tonight's weather.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, when I came over here, I didn't even throw a coat on. I just walked out the door and jumped in the car because it was that warm. And I, you know, it's funny because I've got this spring fever thing going on. I really, really, really just want to get out and geocache.
Oh, me too. I've just got spring fever in the worst way right now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, well, and tonight, you know, I guess being that it's getting warm out too, you know, I'm excited to talk about the topic that we've got going on tonight, because, you know, we're talking about night caching tonight. I've never actually done any night caching. So, but first, before we get to that, let's go ahead and listen to the bad cop.
Geocaching question of the day. The bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is the bad cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Have you ever geocached on a geocaching power trail? 62% of the powerful geocachers that replied said yes, they have geocached on a geocaching power trail. What about you? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Well, tonight's topic actually kind of came out of, you know, I guess just kind of interest on it. And I was actually visiting our guest tonight, John's website, after it was mentioned on Podcaster a few weeks ago. And he contacted me because I just put some stuff in my basket and then abandoned the order. So he contacted me, and next thing I know, we've got him on the line. Well, welcome, John, to the show from cachingatnight.com. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Well, you know, you obviously are a big, huge fan of caching at night because you run a website called cachingatnight.com. What got you interested in caching at night?
Well, if I could just quickly, it's Cash at Night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay, just in case somebody wanted to go and find it, which we always want. What got me involved in it was something that that happens here locally called the BFL Boot Camp. It's an annual event and usually has about 10 different unique, interesting night caches. And my first attempt at that, my geocaching buddy, Baker's Dozen, and I, we went just for something to do. And we've been going every year, and this last year we actually worked with the team and placed our first cache. And these tend to not be your typical night cache. The cache that we did last year involved lasers, and you don't really see that on every other cache.
No, definitely not.
And, you know, being in the northern latitudes, it's dark here in the wintertime, you know, after 5 o'clock. So if you want to go caching, chances are it's going to be dark at some point in time. So it may as well make the most of it, I suppose.
Definitely. Now, I've actually done a few of these that have, like, LEDs, and those are my favorite ones because it's, you know, a lot more than just your regular, you know, fire tack kind of cache. But you mentioned BFL, and I'm not sure what that actually stands for.
Well, it's a group of a loose group of people that go caching every Friday night, and the family-friendly version of that is Big Flashlight. But if you hang around with these guys long enough, you'll know that the B stands for Bunch, the L stands for Lunatics, and the F, I'll leave that up to your listener's imagination.
Now, is caching at night the same thing as doing a night cache?
Not really. Yeah, like I said, you know, it gets dark here kind of early, so at some point in time, you're going to be out caching, and it's going to be at night. It's definitely a different experience. There's no question about that. There's sort of the spooky factor. It's at night. You know, sometimes if you're in the woods or whatever, it's a little bit different. But a night cache is a cache that's been designed specifically to be done at nighttime versus just caching at night. So there's a little bit of a difference there, and both are, you know, from my point of view, they're both fun. It's just some are a little bit different. And at nighttime, it allows you to do some things that you can't really do during the day.
So,
for instance...
Go ahead. Go ahead, sorry.
The laser one that we did, that one's kind of tough to do during the day. So doing that one at night, that was a lot of fun. And the LED ones, you know, they're also kind of hard to do during the day. And, you know, the typical traditional night cache, which involves fire attacks, you kind of want to do that at night, too.
So can you go into, you mentioned kind of like traditional night cache involving fire attacks. Can you explain to our listeners what fire attacks are and how they would be used in a night cache?
Well, a fire attack is a, it actually comes from hunting, and hunters would use them to mark their trail where they're going to go and do hunting because they go in early in the morning or late at night. And at some point in time, I'm not quite sure when, somebody figured out that, oh, we could use these for geocaching. And so it's just a little reflector. They're retro-reflective, which means they shine the light right back at you. It's kind of the same material you see in road signs that's very bright. And you place the tacks on the tree, and typically if it's a geocache, the coordinates take you to the start of a trail. At that point, you need to follow the fire tacks, and you just shine your light. Headlamps work best because it's retroreflective, so it shoots back at your eye. And you just look for these bright little reflectors in the tree. They have stealth versions, which are brown, so you really can't see them during the day, but at night, it's almost like they're glowing when you get that light back at you.
Mm-hmm.
And if the light's a little bit to the side, you know, if you're holding your flashlight down low or somebody also has a flashlight but they're off to the side, you won't be able to see the reflector. It has to be sort of right in your line of sight, which makes it really easy to follow, but it's hard to discover because if you're off one way or the other, you're not going to see the fire attack. And that makes it a little bit interesting when you're out at night and you really have to watch out for stumbling because you've got your head up and you're watching these fire attacks. And, you know, there's trees and stuff on that ground. And, yeah, you don't want to be stumbling on that. I've tripped a couple of times over the years. And so that's your typical, very standard night cache. It's got some fire attacks. You follow that, and at the end of the fire attacks, there's going to be a cache. You could do things that are a little bit different. last year's BFL boot camp, there was one cache called Blind Man's Bluff. And that one took you to an area, you stood in the center, you looked around, and you could see white fire tacks and yellow fire tacks. At each white fire tack was a tube, and the tube inside was the Braille character for a specific number. So you could use your flashlight, see the fire tack, go and find the little tube, and they were camouflaged really well. And then you put your finger inside the tube to feel the Braille character, and then a previous stage on that cache gave you the table to decipher the Braille characters so that you could figure out what the coordinates were. And that's a little bit different use of both fire tacks and the Braille component. It was just slightly different, and I really enjoyed that one. That one was actually a lot of fun. And it took us a little while, too. It's not so easy finding these little tubes. They were copper tubes. I think they were like 3/4-inch copper tubes that you could put your finger inside.
Oh, wow. That does sound like it definitely would be a hard one.
The camouflage was really good. They looked like little sticks. It was a really well-done it was by Team Goju. It was a really well-done cache. And that's very typical of the BFL boot camp. I never realized sort of how much work the folks that put it on put into it until I did mine this year. And I can tell you, it's the most work I've ever done on a cache ever.
Yeah, I know these night caches definitely take a lot of work. And we've talked about the LEDs, the lasers, and the fire techs, which covers most of what I've seen. And now you mentioned the Braille. Is there any other really creative night caches that you've come across?
Well, last year, we've seen Groundspeak introduce the attribute for UV. And so one of the cachers for BFL Bootcamp, he put out an ultraviolet cache. And that one, you had to have an ultraviolet light in order to see some of the information that was contained in the various stages. So that was sort of neat. He was very kind and brought along some UV lights for everybody to use so that the way the BFL Bootcamp works is nobody knows where the caches are until the night of the event, and they get the launch kit, and so they weren't going to be able to be prepared to bring the UV lights with them. So he supplied those for everybody, which is very cool. And so there's UV. My partner, Baker's Dozen, he just did probably one of the coolest caches I've seen in a long time. It was done with infrared. There's certain properties of certain materials that if you try and shine a light through it, the light won't go through. But if you shine infrared light through the material, it passes no problem. And so that particular cache, he was able to put the coordinates behind one of these materials. You can't find the coordinates unless you've got infrared light and something that will read infrared. Most cell phone cameras will actually see an infrared, but you need an infrared illuminator in order to make it all kind of work. And so that poses some technical hurdles because not everybody's kind of walking around with an infrared light.
Sure, definitely.
Yeah, so that's a little bit of a challenge. So there's UV, there's infrared, there's glow in the dark. We did one a couple of years ago that the characters were sort of like in a dot matrix pattern, and if you looked at them, you couldn't figure out what the coordinates were. But if you shine your flashlight on it, some of those dots would glow to form the coordinates. But the problem, when you shine your light on it, you're looking at it as you do that, you lose your night vision. Then you can't see it glowing in the dark. So you ended up having to actually close your eyes, shine your light on it, and then open your eyes.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't really sound like much, but man, I'm telling you, 11 o'clock at night and you're out there in October in Canada, and yeah, it could be a little bit of a trick.
I bet.
You're cold, you want to get going, and but that was also another one of my favorites. I think that maybe that's probably what really got me hooked on this night caching, is just some of the creativity involved in these caches. It blows my mind, really.
Now, I know that some of the glow-in-the-dark stuff I've hit with the UV light works really well because you don't get that night blindness in it, and it really does illuminate. So that might be a good way to handle something like that, too.
Yeah, we found that when we did a grab-a-light cache at night geocoin, and it has some glow-in-the-dark elements. And so when we were playing with the UV lights, it's like, wow, this stuff really glows when you shine UV on it. And so that was a real discovery for me, is that UV makes glow-in-the-dark stuff really bright. It really helps. I guess the material must be UV reactive.
Yeah, that's my guess. And we've done that to charge up some of the glow in the dark stuff because it works better than your standard white light does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we kind of talked about the flashlights a bit, but what other gear would you recommend?
Well, I think the sort of the standard item is definitely a headlamp. And I've been through a few headlamps trying to find the right one. As with everything else, as you move up in price, you tend to get better quality. One of the things that I've done just recently is I've synchronized all of my lights to use AA batteries. I got sick and tired of I had some AAA, some AA. I've got some guys I cash with that have CR123 batteries. I'm like, no. I have one battery charger. I'm always going to have AA's because I've got my GPS. That's what I want. Standardize everything. So now my headlamp is AA. And LED seems to work the best for retro-reflective. I don't know why, but it seems to, the quality of the light really works well. So a headlamp is definitely something that that you're going to want. And obviously, you know, for me, I find that LED lights, not only do they last longer, but they work better in the retro-reflective kind of stuff. I carry safety glasses with me, because if you ever have to bushwhack through stuff at night, headlamp or no headlamp or whatever, those twigs can come up and grab you. And one night I was walking on a trail and I didn't see a twig that was sticking over the trail, and it hit me sideways on my eye, and for like 2 days my eye was sore. So yeah, the safety glasses are, I mean, I wear glasses normally, so I don't always have them, but the safety glasses definitely come in handy when I'm not wearing my glasses, that's for sure. And something that, you know, when you're out at night, you need to make sure that you can find your gear. With my old Garmin 60 CSX, I actually put reflective tape on the GPS itself so that if I ever dropped it, I could just shine my light and it would bounce back at me. With my new GPS, it doesn't have as much room to put the reflective tape, so I actually put a little light called a zip light, so that if I ever put my GPS down, which I've done more than once, the light is illuminated, it's a red light, and I can just see the GPS from all over. And if you're taking the kids out, get either a chemical glow stick or a battery glow stick and put it on the kids, because you want to be able to see them without any trouble. And pets too, I suppose. You can put some illumination on the pets so that you can see the pets as well if you're going to take them out at night.
Now, if you're listening to us live and you have any questions for John, go ahead and give us a call, 724-444-7444. And our Talkcast ID is 7525. Go ahead and press the *8 on your keypad to request a talk. Or if you're in the chat room, just go ahead and check in and we can try and get that read to him. We did have one question from Head Hard Hat, and he says, any ideas for inexpensive night vision?
It's not really necessarily inexpensive for night vision, but certain models of video cameras come with infrared illuminators and night vision kind of built in. The Sony Nightshot is one brand. I don't know about other brands. I know that that's what I have. And that works quite well for night vision, especially if you've got anything that's kind of infrared involved. It works really well.
Now, here's the question. Did you buy the video camera just for night caching?
No. I'd had that camera for a while, and it wasn't until I started doing some of this nighttime stuff, I'm like, hey, I might be able to use that for something. And sure enough, we ended up using that on the infrared cache I was talking about earlier.
Now, I suppose if you have something like that, though, it wouldn't work very well for, like, fire attacks.
The fire attacks themselves, they'll work with just about any light. The key there is to keep the source of light as close to your eye as possible. Retro-reflective, I just did some research recently, and they only work within like a very small angle, like less than 4 degrees from one to the other, which is a very small angle, so you really need to keep the light close to you. A lot of people, you know, when they're walking and they've got the flashlight down at their waist, that's not as effective as, you know, a headlamp or even just taking the light and holding it up to your eye when you're trying to find one. That's definitely a big one.
Now, PG Geodude in the chat room is asking how you use lasers for night caching. And before we get into that, I do want to mention some of the local cachers who've tried to cheat doing the night caches during the day, and they actually used a laser to try to find those fire attacks. But that's not at all the most creative one, and I'm sure that what you did with lasers in your cache is a lot more interesting.
Well, the first laser cache that I saw, which kind of got me hooked on the idea, was fairly straightforward. It was a laser pointer that you found. You would go and find that as the first stage. Attached to the laser pointer was a piece of Lego. And then you would take that laser with the piece of Lego and find another piece of Lego, attach the laser to it, and where it shone is where you went, and sure enough, there would be another piece of Lego. And you did that three or four times until the final stage was to point you at the hiding spot for the cache. So I saw that one. I thought, oh, this is really neat. This is there is something here. And so when we were looking at doing one for last year, last summer I had found some prisms. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we could shine a laser into the prism and bend it so that it came out in a different direction? Because most people, when they shoot a laser, they sort of expect it to go straight in that line. So we tried that, and as soon as you move more than 10, 15 feet away from the laser, the beam is just big enough that it's not going to work as well as we had hoped. But what we ended up doing was mounting the prism inside a container, take the laser, put the laser inside one of the four holes that were on the container, and you didn't know which hole the laser was going to come out. On top of that, we had sort of a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle on the bottom of the container, and it only fit two of four ways. So you could turn it the wrong way, in which case you'd be ended up going in the wrong direction for the next point. And so we did that three times. So you'd put the mounting equipment on top of the attaching point, it would shoot the laser in a certain direction. If you went the wrong way, you had to come back and do that. And we did that three or four times, and then you found the final. So we have another idea of what we might want to try and do with the lasers, but I can tell you, doing anything in the woods with laser where you have to line it up, really, really hard. Really hard. I won't be doing it again. It's that hard.
Yeah, but it does sound pretty difficult.
Yeah, it was. We ended up visiting the site, I don't know, maybe half a dozen times, trying to get the alignment right. And then, you know, we're trying to be sensitive to the environment. We didn't want to use plastic. We were using wood. How do you attach the wood to something without screwing or nailing? It posed some significant challenges, which we overcame, and we were able to do it. But the cache has certainly been problematic.
Now, with this laser that you're talking about, you're just talking about the basic small laser that you can mess with cats and type of thing, or is it anything bigger?
Well, this was a green laser, it was sort of about the size of a Sharpie, a little bit bigger than a Sharpie. And so it wasn't sort of the small, tiny little red ones. It was a little bit bigger than that, but it wasn't overly expensive. I think that these were sub-$30 or something like that for the laser.
Sure, and how did you attach the Legos, or were the Legos attached for that first cache that you found?
The first cache, the Lego pieces themselves were actually screwed to trees. And we knew that we didn't want to use screws to attach anything, so we had to come up with a different mechanism.
Sure.
Yeah, it's always best if you can avoid the screws, because that actually, you know, damages the wood.
Right.
Now, are there any other safety considerations to take into consideration when night caching? Obviously, you mentioned a few with the trees hitting your eyes and things like that, but what else, what kind of other safety considerations can we talk about here?
Well, I think that if you're going to do it sort of in an urban environment, you know, if it's not a great place to go during the day, it's probably a worse place to go at night. So, you know, kind of use your head on that one. I did a cache this last winter, and it was a beautiful sight. We walked along the trail, but there was a 300 or 200 foot drop. It was a beautiful moonlit night. There was a river down below. It was awesome, but we were literally right up to the edge of this precipice. And that's not something you really want to be messing with too much. So anything that's close to water, close to cliffs, anything like that, you have to be really careful, especially if you're going to have the kids along. You know, we do a lot of caching sort of later on at night, but again, in the wintertime, it's still early. You know, it's 5 o'clock. You might have the kids with you. So you definitely have to be watching out for that. Any of those kinds of situations, definitely dicey, for sure.
Now, a couple other things people have said in here in the chat room is also be careful if you're like down south in the United States, because you'll run into things like snakes and spiders and other critters that you probably don't want to run into, and they're harder to see at night.
Yeah, well, I think somebody's told me that that's why the UV attribute kind of ended up getting started on geocaching.com was some of the little critters, the insect-type things, are UV reactive. So if you're walking around with a UV flashlight, you can see the scorpions.
Oh, wow.
I've never been in a place where that was an issue, so I don't know. I'm not speaking from firsthand experience, but that's something that I've been told. So maybe somebody down Nevada way could shed some light on that for us.
Well, and I would also think, too, that at night, it's easier to draw the attention of muggles, too, you know, because if you're flashlights and you're running around in the woods with flashlights and UV lights and things like that, you're definitely going to get muggles and maybe some official muggles that you run into because of that.
Well, I'm kind of surprised in terms of the sort of average muggle. I don't know what it is, but I've gotten more looks from people sort of during the day than I have at night. The official muggles, the ones that have the little flashing lights, they tend to be a little bit more interested. I was doing a first to find the other night, and we found it and we left, and then I was looking at the logs, and the person that came behind us, the police had come and had a little conversation with him. They had no idea what geocaching was, and so this was at 9:30 at night. It wasn't a night cache, it was just a regular cache, but obviously trying to get that first to find, we were there early. And so he was approached. So, yeah, the police tend to be a little bit more interested when they see you walking around. I was out at a night with some guys, and we were doing a cache, and very tricky cache, very tricky fence post cache. It was probably one of the best executions I've seen on that. We must have spent maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, two police cars in the parking lot across from us. They didn't even bother us.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know, maybe they were busy talking to each other and they had no interest in talking to us, but yeah, we weren't approached, so we were kind of surprised by that, actually. So you do draw a little bit of attention from some people. Other people, I don't know, maybe they're just worried about, you know, people that are walking around with flashlights they don't want to know.
Yeah, definitely. Now, any other things that you want to mention here about night caching before we close the show here? Any considerations or tips and tricks for us who want to either find or place night caches?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I hadn't. I think that if you're going to do a night cache, try and find a way to do a cache that makes it interesting to do at night. And certainly don't put it in a place where being there at night is going to draw, you know, far too much attention.
Sure.
You know, fire tax caches work really well in the woods, although I did see that Latitude 47, their blog, they had one that was done on a residential street where the fire tax were in the trees sort of along the sidewalk, and you followed those. So, you know, you can definitely do it, but just be really careful about the selection, and be careful, you know, if you're specifically building a night cache, be mindful of the people that are going to be looking for it. Don't put them sort of in harm's way. You know, if you're preparing the cache during the day, remember that people are going to be finding it at night. So the situation changes. One of the great things about the BFL boot camp is all of the caches are beta tested. So we go out several times to find the caches, and we tend to find certain little things where, you know, maybe we could fix that or change that. That might be a good idea if you're going to do a night cache, is to, you know, have somebody else do it that doesn't know how you've set it up, so that they can bring you some pointers before you unleash it on people.
We have one person in our chat room here saying that they have a night cache in their area that you do while driving. Your headlights reflect the waypoints. So that's definitely a different take on it too, not just through the woods, but while driving.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's sort of where the retroreflective material comes from, is from a road sign. So yeah, neat idea.
Well, we want to thank you for being on our show tonight. Where can people find you again?
They can find me via cacheatnight.com. We've got, that's our online store for all of your night caching goodies.
We want to thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank cache-advance.com for sponsoring this episode. Join us each Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. Well, you can call our voicemail, and we love to hear from our listeners. That number is 206-350-3GPS anytime, day or night, to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.